Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, August 28, 2010, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki or Ea. Enki's interest in and love of humankind is well documented in Sumerian literature, and in Eridu, humankind flourished. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. That potential still exists where Enki buried it, deep in human DNA. Enki knew that the sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, a miraculous gift of Source, which was his delight, and the greatest fear of many other Anunnaki, cannot be oppressed forever. Where better to express the resurrection and actualization of this potential than in New Eridu?
Welcome, everybody, on this nice Saturday. I want to thank you for joining me, and thanks to everyone also who's going to be listening in the archives. Today's show is going to be called Letting Go of 3D, and I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on where this idea for this show came from. There were several discussions that I've had over the last couple of weeks with people who are in their early stages of waking up, and some are, you know, more, but they still haven't solved some of the early questions. So I'm kind of doing a few shows here that address questions regarding how to disentangle oneself from the stuff that's holding us stuck in the control system and stuck in 3D. This show specifically is going to show you how the physics in the system that we're living in right now is going to be affecting the changes that we're going to go through and how these things relate together. We're actually perceiving physics and don't realize it. So, excuse me, you're going to have to bear with me a little bit today. My voice has been very badly misused over the last several days, so I'm going to have a little bit of trouble today, I think. The first thing I'd like to talk about is the actual model of the universe that we're looking at. One of the first things that the Anunnaki did with me was to show me how some of the things we thought we knew about physics was not right. Now, I was a math and physics major when I was in college. Now, bear in mind, I didn't get very far before I ran out of money, but I was definitely on that track, and my interest in those subjects has not gone away, even though my technical expertise may have been developed in other directions for purposes of making a living. But I kind of always have had an ear to the ground and paid attention to what was going on in those fields. And recently, there has been a lot of interesting new concepts coming out that really are threatening to stand physics as we thought we knew it on its ear, particularly quantum theory. It's beginning to look like quantum theory may actually have been a kludge. A kludge is a thing that is done by technicians when they don't really know why something is doing what it's doing, but they're trying to work around it and get it to work anyway. So it's a cheat. It's basically a cheat. And it's beginning to look like a good bit of quantum theory is actually a cheat. It's not that the ghost in the machine does not really exist. It's just that we didn't understand how the machine worked. And quantum theory is full of ghosts. Schrodinger's cat is an example of one of those ghosts where you have something that in a quantum state either it might exist or it might not. It might be alive, it might be dead. It can't be both. It has to be one or the other, you think, from a perceptual point of view. Well, it's because we didn't quite understand how it worked. One of the things that that I've been very interested in is the work of Nassim Haramein. Now, I know a lot of us that are listening to this show have probably heard of him before. I'd like to go ahead and give out his website address, if I can get it to copy. I'd like y'all to look at that page, because in a few minutes we're going to actually talk about what's on the page. We're going to take a look at that model, and we're going to look at it from a perspective of, you know, when you're in the mall and you see that map and it says you are here. I'm going to show us you are here on this map. So and I'm going to explain to you what's coming next as we go along. Nassim Haramein's model is not perfect, but it's really close. And I think I can show you a few of the things about it that aren't perfect and try to explain how it will play out as we cycle through this system. The first thing to understand is we have earth changes. We have earth changes that are real. They are measurable. But we don't necessarily understand why we're having them. And there's an awful lot of agenda-driven stuff out there regarding global warming and control system advantages of playing that global warming card to control us. What actually is occurring isn't just happening on Earth. They've already measured that the other planets in the solar system are heating up. The sun is acting strange, that no one has ever seen it act the way it is now. It oftentimes looks like if you see a candle and somebody's blowing a little bit on that candle and you see everything moving to the backside of the wick and distorting. That's what the sun's magnetic field often is looking like these days. I'm just struck by how closely that resembles what happens when somebody's blowing on a candle. Some electromagnetic force is blowing on the sun. It's the same electromagnetic force that is also affecting the Earth's magnetic field and the heliosphere. The heliosphere is a bubble around the sun. The sun's solar wind and the ions that it throws off go out through the solar system, past the planets, all the way out past Pluto even. And it makes this big bubble around us that keeps out all of the radiation and stuff that comes in from deep space. And there's some pretty nasty radiation out there. We need the heliosphere to protect us so that we aren't getting irradiated. Well, that heliosphere, between the sun being in this intense solar minimum and now it being unstable, that heliosphere is shrinking. That boundary layer is called the heliopause. And that boundary layer is now coming in towards the planets. And some predictions are saying that it may get in as close as Jupiter. It looks like, from what we're seeing, that it will stabilize around Jupiter and won't go any smaller, in which case we're still protected. But Jupiter won't be. Jupiter is going to be catching a lot of that radiation. And as I have described in other shows, we have a band of dust that's coming in, dust and energetic particles that's coming in, 6,000 degrees, I heard. And I'm not sure if that's Kelvin or if that's, I think that's Kelvin, and that's a lot in Kelvin. those particles are extremely energetic. So what's coming towards us is not a small. And Jupiter's going to be getting hit with this. And Jupiter being a big, already energetic gas giant, just barely too small to be a brown dwarf, according to models that were run many years ago. Newer models indicate that it might actually be big enough to be a brown dwarf. So there's a possibility. If people keep talking about the blue star, well, that could be our blue star. The other blue star that could be is the galactic center, if we have a Walker event, which I've also talked about before. But, you know, all of those things are happening across this entire segment of space. That's one of the things that the Anunnaki didn't understand. When they saw this thing coming across space, they didn't understand that it was just their planet that was going to be affected. Matter of fact, they ran a little ways before they looked back and said, hey, it's continuing going. It's chasing us. And they figured, okay, well, we can run far enough that we can get away and regroup and figure out what we're going to do next. We'll have a few thousand years to deal with it. But it's not going away. This effect is not going away. And it's all related. This is all part of a bigger system. I'm about to show you the bigger system that brings all of these things together and makes them all make sense. Go ahead, and if you're not already there, go ahead and go to that Resonance Project URL. And we're going to take a look at the magenta and blue animation at the top underneath where it says Lehman Papers. That is Haramain's proposed model of the universe. And what you see there is at the very center, so it looks kind of like a yo-yo, an old Duncan yo-yo. I don't know how many of y'all played with those, but that's what it looks like to me. Or you could look at it as being too smashed. I think I like yo-yo better because it has the hole down the center, the spindle, where it spins around. And then it has the little bands that come out and wrap around and go back into the center. That's a really, 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 that was actually shown to me by the Anunnaki very, very early on when we were working together. And I've got very good confidence that this is a correct model. There are a few things about it that aren't quite right. The first thing that they don't have right in this is he has all these discrete little blue balls going around each on their own little linear trajectory. That's not how that works. What's actually coming out is if you go to the center and go ahead and look at the lower one because it's a little easier to see on the lower one. You see the line. Make those blue balls into a line and make it think in your mind as if what blue ball was moving along that same line that's being described by the multiple balls. What's actually happening as that line is moving away from center, away from source, time is stretching out. There is a timeless point in that center. It is time equals infinity in that center. And as it moves along that line and moves out, it's stretching. It's stretching that infinity. And time is becoming discrete and more linear. So we begin to experience the passage of time. And as we get further away, it's stretched even more. So each one of those points in time is further apart. So time seems to be moving more slowly because the nature of the relationship between time and space is always constant. So if one part of it changes, the other part of it changes. It's called dilation. We've stretched it out. Now you'll notice at one point it kind of hits a breakover point. There's like a little lip there and it flips over to the other side and goes back in. That's the other part of his model that he's got a little bit wrong. It has to do with the shape of the thing as he has it drawn. Really what's happening there is the time is speeding back up again because time is starting to compress. The points, those little time points, which are ephemeral little things, they're just references, they're not real things, are getting closer together. So we're getting across from one to the next faster. A lot of us have noticed that time seems to be speeding up. We look at the clock and, you know, it just, where did the time go? We look at the calendar and where did the weeks and months go? Wasn't it just Easter? Didn't the kids just get out of school? That sort of thing. Or in my case, it's like, I only moved to Austin a little bit ago. No, it's been a decade. But no, some of that's attributable to just, you know, being busy. But really, truly, a lot of us have noticed that time does seem to be moving faster. There's a physical reason for that. And the reason is that time is actually compressing as it's going back to source because it's going to get to that eternal moment. And how long is it going to be there? Well, that's a really good question because it's eternal. It's going to feel like it's always. But this model shows you that it's cyclical, which is good. Now, what else happens when time speeds up? I see a question. What is the origin of spin? Ask Nassim that question. what else happens when time speeds up? Well, if you're let's assume that we're looking at a wave form, like a note of music. Lately, I've been playing with Audacity, which is a sound editor, and you can actually visualize the waveforms of the sound that you're playing. And you can compress that sound, and when you compress that sound, what happens when you speed up a tape? It gets higher frequency, right? Well, that's basically what's going on. Since we're getting that compression, and the waveform is getting closer together, it's going to sound higher, and it's going to be a higher frequency. Well, guess what? That frequency determines what dimension we're in. Yeah. So, as we wrap around the side of that universal model and start heading back in toward source, pressure is going to be on us to change state. And changing state, in this case, is going to be to go to a higher frequency, and eventually, when we reach a high enough threshold frequency, to enter into a new phase of existence or a new dimension. What a lot of us call it 4D or 5D or whatever. You know, I don't know which one you're going to wind up in, but we're all going to wind up somewhere higher than where we are, and we're going to continue to wind up higher. There are some people who think that we're in 4D now. I'm not sure. I don't know how you could tell. But ascend, yes. That's what I'm talking about. This is part of the process. And guess what? Everybody goes. It's just going to be easier for some than others, because some of us aren't going to fight it, and some of us are going to go along with it. If you fight it, it's going to be hard. If you go along with it, it'll be pretty easy. The reason 2012 is considered the tipping point in all of this is at a certain point, the Mayans looked at their calculations and realized that they were looking at something that was over this event horizon, this tipping point. And the margin of error that was coming into their equations, however they were deriving their equations, they were getting a lot of errors. And they realized they could not calculate without too much error beyond that point. And that's why they cut their calendar off. Simply because whoever instructed them on how to do those calculations did not teach them all of the model. Whoever taught them didn't tell them about the tipping point, the event horizon, the turning around, the going back, the raising in frequencies. Does that not sound like the omitted kind of information that that characterizes the powers that pretend? Yep, pretty much. So what we have that we're looking at there is just cumulative error, and they realized, whoop, got too much error, we can't talk about it anymore. That was good of them, actually, because it drew our attention to that moment in time. What's different about this moment in time? And all kinds of scary stories have been made up about it, but it's not all that scary. It's physics. What happens when we reach that event horizon? And we may have technically already reached it, but we're still in that buffer zone. You know what I said about the Mayans? At 2012, they got too many errors, which tells me somebody made a decision saying, there's too many errors. I don't feel confident about these calculations. I want us to stop here. The tipping point that actually occurred before 2012. But we have not gone so far into the new time-space paradigm that the old equations weren't working anymore. They were still mostly working because we hadn't, if you go over a rounded edge, it takes a while before you realize you've turned the corner. And that's what's happened. You've gone around a rounded edge, and it takes a while before you realize you turned the corner. So we may have already turned it. I don't know. Doesn't matter. We can safely assume that we are either about to turn it or have just turned it. It doesn't matter. And 2012 is ephemeral in that it was an arbitrary date with which some ancient astronomer looked at his numbers and said, there's too much error in this. I refuse to calculate any further. It's not an endpoint. It's not a stopping point. He probably looked at his calendar and said, hey, you know, the point at which I realized this and the point at which we've got a major calendar change are pretty close. Let's just synchronize the two things. That's my guess as to what went on there. Because that's how a scientist would think. Now, what's going to happen as we get closer to 2012 and more of the new paradigm effects? We've been in a dilation phase, and we know how things act in a dilation phase. Now, if we're entering a contraction phase, how do things act in a contraction phase? The first thing to realize is that, as I had mentioned earlier, as time compresses, frequencies go up. as frequencies go up, in a dilation universe, as frequencies go up, things heat up. Matter heats up. As you input more energy at a higher frequency, things heat up. Well, in a contraction phase, is that still going to be true? I'm not convinced that it is. I think that it may be normalized, or it may even invert. We don't know yet. We haven't been in it long enough to observe the change. We're living at a unique point here in terms of physics, in that we're getting to see both sides of this universal system. And it's unsettling, but we're going to know exactly when we get done analyzing this. It's going to be very cool. It's not going to happen all at once. This change is not going to happen. It's not even really going to be linear, because it's going to come in fits and starts. As each physical law reaches its threshold error, like what the Mayans were running into, and it starts to change, systems are slowly going to change. Things that used to work aren't going to work anymore. How quickly is that going to happen? I don't know. But remember, time is compressing, so we can expect it to speed up. Because if it's compressed X amount today, tomorrow it's going to be compressed by X plus one amount, that X plus two. And it's not going to be a linear function. It's going to be probably logarithmic, where you're multiplying instead of adding. So we can expect the changes to speed up. Asking about differential equations and time speeding up. I'm not going to get into the math, because it's really impossible for me to talk about math on the radio. I am really a touchy-feely blackboard person, and I'm also really, really rusty, and I will probably tell you wrong at this point. I have to be able to read the literature. There's plenty of stuff online. If you want to learn about it, you can do that. What I can tell you, even though I can't tell you exactly how all of those physical laws are going to be affected at this point in time, what I can tell you is that the key to getting through these things is to be aligned and keep up with our changes of resonance. A lot of what we're seeing in the New Age movement, talking about frequencies and resonances, that's not accidental. There's no coincidence involved in this. We're getting the message clearly, whether it's from Source or from ETs or the Anunnaki or whoever. We're getting the message that we need to pay attention to what we are and what we're resonating. And I'll explain to you in a minute why that is, why it's important to be conscious of what we're doing as we're doing it. As we get through this, remember what I said, the ones that are better aligned and more in touch with things will have an easier time, and the ones that are not well aligned are going to have a harder time for it. The reason for that is this. Let's assume we're talking about any physical system. Plate tectonics is a good example. You've got two plates, and they're huge, massive earth plates that are grinding against each other. And some places they slip by each other pretty easily, because the rock or mud or whatever's in there is small grained, and it kind of just goes along with the flow. It just rolls. It goes with it. And there aren't any earthquakes in those areas. Matter of fact, they say California is lucky because it has a lot of talc in the soil there, and the talc is slippery. So you don't get the big, humongous earthquakes there as often as you get in other places where there's not so much talc in the soil and it doesn't slip as easily. Other places along these big tectonic plates have granite and hard, hard rock. It's strong. It's robust. It doesn't yield until it breaks. And then you get the humongous earthquake. Well, people are going to be like that. The people that are going with the flow and are making the little tiny incremental changes, the little tiny adjustments, are going to get through all of these changes a lot easier than the people who insist on keeping things the way that they are. They know they're right. They're strong. Their will not be broken. They are insisting on manifesting the old paradigm, even though the new paradigm is upon them. And the universe is so much bigger than they are. It's like those tectonic plates. The tectonic plates is going to be bigger and stronger than any rock it comes across. And when that thing really wants to move, it'll move. And that rock is going to get smashed. All right? Now, with souls, they don't get broken up like a rock. Not exactly. But it is not fun to get smashed when the universe says, thou shalt change. And you say, no, I'm not. Yeah, you're going to. It's just not going to be fun. Now, here we are talking about the relationship of one's consciousness to one's surroundings. There's a series of famous paintings. I believe the artist was René Magritte. This is not a pipe. You know, it's not. It's a painting of someone's perception of a pipe. Obvious, but not so obvious to some people. Some people come up and look at it and go, that's a pipe. What do you mean it's not a pipe? No, it's a painting of someone's perception of a pipe. So it's actually two steps removed, minimum. And it's even three steps removed, because it's someone's perception of the painting that is someone's perception of the pipe. Tricky, huh? Perceptions like that. Really tricky. Everything that you perceive in the universe, all the scientific measurements that we make through instruments. And those instruments may be our eyes, our ears, our skin. Even our sixth sense is a perception. It may be a little bit more closely aligned to something universal than other things, but it's still a perception. The instruments that we measure things with. The instrument is doing the perceiving, and then we are perceiving what we think the instrument is doing. So you've got levels of perception going on there. Each one is a reduction. So when you think you're seeing truth, you may not be. Your perception is something you need to pay a lot of attention to. Am I really perceiving what I think I'm perceiving? All experience is perception. All experience is our internal decoding of those raw sensory inputs and our reactions to those, not the thing itself. Exactly, Serge Kitty. The eyes are the first lens. Well, not really. Let me tell you why. Because what's happened before the eye even had an opportunity to do any sensing? Well, we can assume that a photon came in from somewhere and struck something and bounced off of it and went into our eye. So we're perceiving the photon that has bounced, not the thing itself. And we haven't even really perceived the photon. What we have perceived is the chemical change made by the photon on our retina. More than that, we have perceived the neurological impulse generated by the nerve. You see what I mean? It's just layers and layers and layers. It's so much fun to trace all of this stuff. When we get all these perceptions together and we store these perceptions and our reactions to them in our brain, we build up a thing that we call our life. And life is a story we tell ourselves to make sense of that sequence of perceptions and reactions to those perceptions. When we talk about, well, that's not what my life is like, that's shorthand for, well, that doesn't correspond to the sequence of things that I have stored in my database of perceptions and reactions. Because we perceive, and because we are conscious of that perception, and because consciousness is not a one-way thing, it's not all perception. There's also reaction, and there's also manifestation. What we perceive, how we react to it, determines how we manifest. And if we perceive a big, scary universe with lots of scary, nasty changes, and things are out to get us, guess what we're going to manifest? Because we're going to react really negatively to that. We're probably going to manifest that big, scary universe that's going to do nasty things to us, and we're going to want to resist it and fight it and flee from it or whatever. If we perceive instead that this is a part of the natural flow of things, and that if we go along with it, it's going to be okay, guess what we're going to manifest then? We're going to manifest exactly that. So, pay attention to your perceptions as you go through these changes. Does something that you perceive scare you? Find out why it does. What is it challenging you about? What's the reality of it instead? Are you perceiving the pipe or are you perceiving the painting? Think about that when you come across one of these. Now, the people who align themselves really well, they're just going to be able to naturally flow with it. They're not going to have those sticking points and those big earthquakes in their existence. So if you can rule your perception and thereby rule your reaction, then you'll get along a lot better. There's only one problem that we have outside of ourselves, really, when it comes to these things, and that's entanglements. And that's why that's what the title of this about letting go of 3D is all about. Is getting rid of those 3D entanglements. Our perception can get locked into an entanglement. And understand when I'm talking about entanglement, you can think of that as being caught in a briar patch, and that briar patch can be emotional or it can be physical. It can even be spiritual. Because the things that entangle us are things, possessions, materialism, people, relationships that don't necessarily feed us properly, nurture us properly. Things are out of balance between people. And even spiritual things, ideas and ideals, religions that don't benefit us, the religions that maybe are based on control system ideas as opposed to real ones, perhaps valid ideas that have been subverted for some reason or another, things that don't have truth as their fundamental basis. Those are all things that can entangle you. That entanglement, the word entanglement, is also used in physics, in quantum. If you talk about quantum entanglement is responsible for the principle that is expressed in magic as once together, always together. It's the two-slit experiment where the photon or electron or whatever goes through the different slits, and since they were divided, they were once together, and now they're divided, but they act as if they're still the same thing, even though they're separated in space. That's entanglement. Guess what? That's entanglement in your relationship with your 3D world, with your 3D reality. You are a particle in that 3D reality, and you are entangled with things. And when those things move, that's why NLP pacing and leading works. You're entangling that person's consciousness with yours so that when you make a particular movement, you can make them make the movement. That's how that works, because you are entangling them, and it's physics. It's not just psychology. It is also physics. I'm seeing here, we must learn to listen to our inner knowings rather than listen to others. This is what got us into this mess in the first place, the powers that pretend. Kimberly wrote that, and I tend to agree with that. I do think you should actually listen to others. There's no benefit to just closing the doors to perception. But you have to be a gatekeeper to your perception. Because even if you encounter a negative message out there, it's what you do with that negative message. You can learn from that negative message and do something useful for yourself with it. You don't have to succumb to it. Information is just that. Information is just information. It remains information until you choose to act on it. Evolve or dissolve. I like that motto, Angel. Thank you. Now, material things. I know I've had a couple of discussions with people regarding stepping back, cutting back on material stuff, and reducing entanglements with material stuff. And I'm very much into that right now. And I made the decision to quit my job and to devoting this work instead, which is not at this point in time paying me a penny. You know, that was kind of a scary step. I really had to put a lot of faith in what was going to happen with me, because I've always been like the ultimate control person, as far as I have my money and I control my money and I control all of the circumstances of my life around me and I control all of these material things. Well, I had to kind of step back from that and say, no, this is not the most important thing in my being right now. The most important thing in my being right now is getting this message out. So, you know, this one's hitting close to home. The material things to a soul. When you think about your soul is like the most free thing ever. All right? It's infinitely large and infinitely small and infinitely massless all at the same time. So all of this stuff that we gather around us, think of ourselves as being a beautiful star. And we are attracting to ourselves through our intentions and through our manifestation ability. We're attracting stuff to ourselves. And look at it as like hoarding. You're cluttering up your space. What had been beautiful, pristine, empty space in which you could radiate out in all directions equally. You've got all of these asteroids of, you know, your house, your car, your wardrobe, you know, whether or not you have the right color of shoes. It's kitsch. It's bling. All right? It's tacky, and it's blocking you from manifesting in all of the directions that you can. Everywhere you have a thing, you have a blockage because you have to do something with that thing. You have to interact with that thing. Even if it's just to see that thing, you have to interact it. That takes some of your energy away. That's why the sages give up their possessions. Now, I'm not saying you have to do this absolutely. That's ridiculous. There are places for good things. No star out there that is worth its salt is in isolation. It has its planet. It has its family. It has beautiful things. Our sun has Gaia. Our sun has Venus. Our sun has Mars. These are beautiful, wonderful things. All of these things, they're naturally there and they belong there. So having a beautiful thing is not a bad thing. Don't feel bad about having things that bring you joy, that belong in your life. The test on that is whether or not it takes, whether it takes energy away from you or whether it gives energy back to you. Do you love something so much that every time you look at it, it just makes you happy? Well, you know what? You don't really have to get rid of that. Unless it's taking energy away from you, it's okay to be there. People. Relationships can get entangled if there is dependency or codependency, particularly if there's codependency. The way to tell the difference with your relationship with people is the same way. Does the relationship add value to both partners? Does that relationship bring you energy, bring you insights, bring you good things in greater measure than it demands of you? If it makes you feel bad, you need to get away from it. Or you need to change it until it does make you feel good. Even a difficult relationship, if it pays back more than what it demands, that's a good relationship. You have to watch that energy exchange. Are you draining your partner? Is your partner draining you? Sometimes temporarily we have situations like with small children where we permit them to drain our energy because we know they need it, just like a mother nurses her child. We permit that to occur for a period of time, but there is an exit point to that. And when it passes that exit point, usually around the age of 18 to 25, you say, there's the door, go get your own life. And if you don't do that at the appropriate time, you see the circumstances where you have these codependent relationships or these dependency relationships. And they're not good for the individuals involved or the society as a whole. And then there's ideas. One of the hardest things that people are going to end up having to learn out of these changes that we're coming into is that a lot of our religious and scientific dogma, and I put both of them in the same category because science can be just as dogmatic as religion. A lot of that was built on error and or lies. We have to change what we believe in. That's going to be hard for some people. It may be impossible for some people. And anybody who isn't able to balance themselves with material things and people things and idea things, this isn't just an internal rebalancing that we're going to have to do. That's going to have to be external also. This is a holistic thing. Our lives need to be resonating with the coming days. And it's going to be an incremental change from day to the next because the physics that we're operating under, the operating paradigm that we're operating under, is changing slightly from day to day. In closing, I'm going to suggest that everybody take a look at Nassim Haramein's model. He has an excellent series of videos up on YouTube. I'm going to try to paste those together so they can be viewed. I've got a program called Dragon Tape. It's Drag On Tape, but it looks like Dragon Tape when you read it. That's a website that will allow you to splice together YouTube videos. I'm going to try to get all of those videos in the next week spliced together on there and put a URL out for y'all to view all this, that series as a continuous video. I will warn you that this thing is massively long. It's like 45 10-minute videos. So you can guess how long that is. I'm not even going to try to calculate it. That's hours and hours. But it's really excellent. So I recommend that you study that and to consider how these things may manifest in your life, how these changes affect you. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this either in the show. I'm really going to be trying as I learn more, because I am learning more. This is new stuff to me too. So there'll be more on this. That's pretty heavy stuff for a Saturday. So I'm going to wish y'all a great rest of the weekend. Try to get some rest. Do a little meditation. Enjoy the last days of summer if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. And just send y'all away here with the song of it, with the song Far Away from the Sun by MJC.
volume looks very big. Due to blow of sun wind, it is far away from sun. When it operates a long time in the eclipse phase, many water and ice material are filled into its holes.